Oh, sure.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. And this is a show where we deal with issues around mental health. And we all know that the truth will set you free. But on this show, we ask the question is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? So this is a show where we challenge people to take a look at themselves, to be honest with what they're avoiding and honest about the things that have been holding them back from living more powerfully and more joyously, and to take a look at how a greater sense of honesty and balance in one's life can really set you free. So tonight's topic is, since this is Gay Pride Month, and last week, if you listened, we dealt with issues of teenagers coming out, particularly around middle school. And tonight we're talking more in general about gay pride then and now, basically meaning that from the early 1970s, or from 1969 when Stonewall occurred, that started this whole momentum, to 2003, we're here to explore tonight how early activists laid the foundation for today's GLBT community, and whether that foundation is supporting us now or not, and what Pride is about, whether it's just a celebration, or whether it's still a call to action. And my guest, who I'll be introducing later, is one of the people that helped lay that foundation for GLBT people throughout the world, particularly here on the West Coast in L.A., Don Kilhefner, who's a clinical psychologist. So, Gay Pride. If you've listened to the show before, I've been very open about the fact that I'm a therapist and a gay man, and actually was in college from 1968 to 72, and Stonewall occurring in New York City in 1969. I was in upstate New York in Binghamton at a small school, at least at the time it was a small school, called Harper College. Today it's part of the, it's called Binghamton University today, or SUNY Binghamton. And I remember it being a very safe place to come out and deal with my sexuality, to deal with my confusion, my fears, my shame, all the stuff that for a lot of people, a lot of particularly young people, but a lot of people who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, who have not faced certain parts of them, may still be dealing with a lot of the shame, guilt, and fear that I was dealing with back then, and many of my fellow students and many people in this country, as Gay Pride really got started. Luckily, I was on a very liberal campus. In fact, by 1971, the Gay Student Organization was the second largest student organization on campus, second only to the student government. So it was, in a lot of ways, a very safe place to explore, to come out, to talk, and come out I did. And, you know, my parents and my family knew that I was gay. At least we talked about it when I was about 21 and still in college. And throughout my lifetime, even through my marriage, I was still very open about my my feeling towards men, my sense of identity as a gay man. And to be honest with you, at 53, I'm still at times trying to figure out what that really means and how that fits into who I am and what I'm here to do. And right now, being honest and teaching people to tell the truth and trying to live up to that philosophy myself, telling the truth faster, to me is an important part of that. A lot of clients I deal with today, you know, I've dealt with people who are clients who are in their 60s and 70s and just now facing desires that they've had since childhood or adolescence and finally now beginning to deal with it. I dealt with clients and have known people who in their 20s, you know, in 30s in marriages raising kids, in their 40s in marriages raising kids, and are just now beginning to have the courage to get honest and deal with feelings that have been such a source of conflict and shame and guilt for them. So tonight's show is really about what pride is about. And are we, do these celebrations that we see going on here in L.A., San Francisco, in cities literally all over the world, are they about pride? Are they celebration? Are they mask? Are there ways that people mask, you know, still their struggles and shame? Is all this corporate sponsorship and how big some of these celebrations have gotten us away from the grassroots feeling and sense of community and gotten it into more of just another reason to party, which, as far as I'm concerned, the gay community is never at a loss of a reason to party, and it's not necessarily a healthy thing. So there are a lot of questions out there about what gay pride is, and this is a live show. It is a call-in show. If you have questions or comments you want to contribute, whether you're in agreement with what we're saying or not, if you're in the local Phoenix area, the number is 480-874-1311, 874-1311. If you're listening to us over the Internet and you're outside the Phoenix area, anywhere in the country, there's a toll-free number, which is 1-888-437-7660. 888-437-7660. So I know I've been all over the place with just random thoughts about what pride is about, what my own experience has been about, and I'm going to rely on my guest tonight, Don Kilhefner, Dr. Don Kilhefner, who's a PhD clinical psychologist here in Los Angeles. And Don is actually was one of the co-founders with Morris Kite of the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center, which was founded over 30 years ago and is still the largest in the world and the first to establish. He helped establish a recovery house called the Van Ness Recovery House many years ago. He was part of the Gay Liberation Front and Radical Fairies in the 1960s, and currently, in addition to being a psychotherapist in private practice, he is one of the founders of the Gay Men's Medicine Circle, which really is a safe place for gay men in particular to explore their sense of soul and spirit. So, Don, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Stuart. It's a pleasure to be here and talking with you.
And I also honor you. You know, I told you a little while ago, I watched the a documentary, I think it was on HBO last night, on Harry Hay. And I know that you're basically, from what I know about you, a fairly humble man, but to say thank you for all you've done, particularly here in L.A., but the role model that you set yourself up to be in terms of courage and activism, you know, you do quite a bit of appreciation. So
it's been meaningful and very purposeful work for me, so I have grown tremendously out of that. Now 37, 38 years of front lines work with gay and lesbian people, both here in Los Angeles and throughout the country.
Well, I'd actually like to start with maybe a little bit of your own story. You know, how did your activism get triggered or sparked? And when it comes to the issue of gay pride, how do you see it then and now in terms of the difference from when all this got started or when you got started in it and to what you see now with all of these celebrations?
Well, in terms of my own involvement, I grew up in an Amish family in Pennsylvania, joined the Peace Corps after I left college, spent a couple years in Ethiopia, 3 years in Ethiopia, came back to this country in 1965 and got involved in the social change movement, social justice movement, the civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam War movement. And so I come out of an activist background. And along came the Stonewall Rebellion in 1969, and immediately I knew that was my struggle, and immediately got involved in the Gay Liberation Front here in Los Angeles and have been involved ever since. I think as we talk about this being a celebration, June 28th, 1969, being an important event in gay history, not only in this country but throughout the world, because it was the beginning of the gay liberation movement. And it's important to remember that Stonewall was a rebellion. It was an uprising. We kind of forget that with parades and parties and what have you that we have today. It was basically gay people fighting back against an oppressive, homophobic system. And in the long run, we were successful.
Do you see the successes? I mean, obviously we're seeing, Canada just legalized same-sex marriages, and in this country, of course, there have been a great deal of progress. But if all that would not be happening, obviously, if it wasn't for the consciousness that all of these celebrations and all of the activism over 30 years hadn't, for that hadn't been there.
Right.
But as a therapist, and I know myself, as I was talking about a lot of the clients I've worked with, there are still so many people with that internal struggle.
Well, the good news, I think that internal struggle still continues because homophobia continues. And the two are connected in some way. I think the good news, I read an article in the New York Times just very recently, which was talking about the coming out, the average age for coming out, that 30 years ago, it was 28. Today, it's somewhere between 16 and 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in itself is a very significant factor. That one of the things that the gay liberation movement was fighting for was for we as gay people and lesbians to be ourselves, to be open, to be out, being a fact of life. And I think that that's one of the major accomplishments that we've achieved. That coming out today is not the struggle that it was in 1969, when there was no community to come out into. I think that's the second achievement of this struggle so far. And it's a young struggle. We're just barely scratching the surface. But I think the second achievement was that we created a community. And by community, I mean a people who band together to assume responsibility for each other. And I think that's one of the major accomplishments. Here in Los Angeles, for example, and I think in other places in the country, Phoenix included, I think we're dealing with the fact that it was the creation of that community out of virtually nothing in 1969, which allowed the successes that we've had both politically, socially, culturally, spiritually, to allow those kinds of achievements to go forward. And so a sense of community, a sense of brotherhood and sisterhood is a very important part of this. In many ways, it's a very tribal phenomena. There are very few people around the world today where we have that instant sense of belonging to each other. If I go to New York, if I go to Minneapolis, or wherever I go, immediately there's a sense of brotherhood, sisterhood, a tribal sense of community and belonging. Now, this is not a tribe which is defined by geography or defined by bloodline necessarily, but it's a tribe that's defined by a certain consciousness, a certain way in which we see the world, a certain way in which we move in the world, that we all feel an affinity to each other around.
Well, speaking of that affinity, we're going to talk, actually. We need to take a short break here, but when we come back, I want to talk about that sense of affinity and oneness and whether it really exists in the way I think some of our society expects it to be. So if you just stay tuned, we're going to take a short break here. We'll be back with Tell the Truth Faster in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight's topic is gay pride, then and now, talking about The transformation that the GLBT, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community has gone through since the beginnings of this movement in 1969-70 till today. And my guest tonight is Don Kelhefner, a clinical psychologist in Los Angeles and early activist and mentor and role model for so many people, and a quiet mentor and role model to the fact that I don't think, Don, a lot of people even know who you are in outside Los Angeles, and know that a lot of the organizations that are going today are modeled after a lot of the things that you got started. So
you know, there's a saying among the Navajo that you measure a person by how lightly they have stepped on this earth,
mm-hmm.
by the faintness of their footprint rather than by the strength of the footprint. And so I've always been somebody who has moved lightly but with great determination and single-mindedness.
And with great accomplishments coming out of it. Before the break, we were talking about that sense of affinity gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender people seem to have wherever they go, that sense of connection and knowing and how it creates a sense of community. I remember in 1983, on my first trip to Europe, I remember being in Amsterdam the first night and sitting in a gay bar and actually saying to myself how at home I felt, and how if it wasn't for the fact that I couldn't eavesdrop on any of the conversations that I was hearing because they were all in German or Dutch or French or something else, I could have been in a gay bar anywhere in the U.S. because it just felt the same. It felt like home, the attitude, the energy and interaction. But with that, we often hear, you know, especially conservatives talking about the gay agenda and blocking the word gay as if everybody who's gay is the same, thinks the same, acts the same, wants the same things and everything else. And yet those of us who are gay or who may know a lot of gay or lesbian, bisexual, transgender people realize that there's as much of a sense of diversity within this community as there is in the society at large. I mean, there are gay Republicans and gay Democrats, and you know, there's everything from, you know, men who are very effeminate and men who are very masculine, and women who are very effeminate and women who are very masculine, and people who want to have kids and are having kids today, and people who don't, and all sorts of. So it's like, how do you place that sense of diversity and actually describe a sense of community with it?
Well, I would take that diversity as part of a sign of the healthiness of that community, because one of the things that characterizes any kind of community, and it certainly was true with our ancestors, no matter where they came from throughout the world, was there was a great deal of individuality within the village, within the tribe. And so that diversity is one of our strengths. It's not necessarily a problem. Now, whenever you get three or more people together, you're going to have many different opinions coming out. So that's to be expected. But the diversity is, I think, part of what makes us such a healthy community, that there is such a broad range of points of view, interest, activities, etc. But I think the most important part around that, Stuart, is the fact that we have to remember that what we're talking about community is merely 35 years old. We're talking about a historical event of great importance that never before, with perhaps the exception of Weimar Germany and Paris a little bit between the wars, that there's no consistent ongoing gay and lesbian community. The one in Weimar was wiped out by Hitler's rise to power, and but even then there wasn't the sense of we're responsible for each other. And so what we're dealing with here is a very new, very fragile phenomena, and that's the idea that there are gay and lesbian people. Not a sex act, but gay and lesbian people, where we're defined by our personhood, and that we're coming together to create something that the world has never seen before. And 35 years is merely a blink of the eye in terms of doing that work. What I would want to see, where will we be 300, 400, 500 years from now with the foundations that are being laid now? What we're talking about is the introduction of a new consciousness into culture, into civilization, certainly Western civilization, that can be traced back to Walt Whitman, The Leaves of Grass, where Whitman for the first time talked about that there were, he didn't use the word gay, he used the word adhesive to describe a certain kind of consciousness that we today would call gay consciousness. Edward Carpenter, one of our ancestors, who began to write for the first time about the fact that we have a social role, that gay people are doing something in culture, no matter where we're found around the world. And then Harry Hay, with his breakthrough in 1951 with the founding of the Mattachine Society, which began to talk about us as a minority group, as a people, as a separate people, where that must take political action to gain our rightful place in society. So that you're talking about the evolution of something the world has never seen before.
Well, Harry, you mentioned Harry Hay, and I mentioned that I'd watched a documentary last night, and I mean, even the confusion, I mean, obviously the guts and courage it took in 1951 of all times, right after World War II and everything else, for him to even come out and start a group like the Mattachine Society. And then what amazed me also is that once it actually started opening up, they asked him to leave.
Yes.
It was like they couldn't handle the diversity within their own.
Well, it wasn't diversity. It was the fact that the Mattachine Society came out of a very radical background. And after a few years of success here in Los Angeles and throughout the country, conservatives moved in and took over, really right-wing people. And it then took for another 20 years, it took a very conservative, don't rock the boat, don't demand, don't become too uppity kind of position. The same thing happened in the 70s with gay liberation. Gay liberation comes out of a radical background, much like the Mattachine. And it was during the 70s where most of those gains were made. It was that radical activist fighting oppression, finding our voice, taking no for an answer, not taking no for an answer, which created a whole new scenario for us as gay and lesbian people. And then with the Reagan Revolution in the late 70s, we have a shift of our community to the right. And today, much of the leadership of the gay and lesbian community is very conservative, and one might even say right-wing. Okay. So you find a replication of what happened with Harry and these radicals being forced out of the movement. You find the same sort of thing in the 70s and 80s and 90s.
Wow. Well, we're going to continue this conversation with Don Kohlhefner about gay pride then and now. This is Stuart Altrew on Tell the Truth Faster. Please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. And tonight's topic is gay pride then and now. And we've been talking about, you know, the transformation of this sense of community, of GLBT community from Stonewall through today. And my guest tonight is Dr. Don Kohlhefner, a psychotherapist in Los Angeles, and one of the pioneers that is we're very glad to have around, and I'm very glad to have you on the show. We were talking a little bit about Harry Hay earlier, and I know that you knew Harry Hay, who I think just passed away last year, I think it was.
Correct, last October.
At age 90. Yeah, I thought it was up there. And in the documentary last night, Harry talked about answering three questions in his search for who he is as a gay man, and basically, or the sense of community. And the three questions were, who are we, where do we come from, and why are we here? And I'm going to lay those three questions in your lap. Who are we?
Well, I think what you're doing is you're talking about, and I think Harry and Edward Carpenter and Walt Whitman were the genitors of these questions and these discussions. I think you're laying out for us what is, I think, probably the most important issue facing us as gay and lesbian people today. That one of the dynamics in our community, let's say since the old 1990s up to the present, has been largely assimilation, gay and lesbian assimilationists. The idea that we're no different from anybody else, and therefore we should live like anybody else, and even some people going as far as saying our gayness is not very important. I think one of the places where Harry was important and gay liberation following on this is asking the question, why are there gay people? Who are we? Why are there gay people? Because we know from evolutionary biology is that a trait is not passed from one generation to another generation unless that trait is benefiting the survival of that species. So the question really should be is, what is it that gay and lesbian people are doing that since we have had written records, if not before, we have an understanding that we have been present, gay and lesbian people have been present. And generation after generation after generation, we keep surviving, we keep reappearing in our species. So the question is, what are we doing that makes our presence in the human species so important?
What are we doing, or what are we charged to do, and are we doing it?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Because I think in a lot of cases, we don't know that this may be our charge, and in a lot of cases, we're afraid to step up to the plate and do it.
Well,
so
I think it's been part of the oppression of gay people, particularly in the West. Now, in other cultures, that's not as true. In traditional Native American culture or traditional African culture or traditional Asian cultures, that our role in society was recognized and honored in some way or another. In Christian industrial Europe and North America, where homophobia has been at its greatest, is where that oppression has happened, and we haven't been able to manifest ourselves in society. For example, Maladoma Somme, a West African shaman and PhD from the Sorbonne, a teacher of mine, I asked him about gay people in his traditional village in Burkina Faso in West Africa. And this is what he said to me. He said, well, we don't call you gay and lesbian. What we do is we call you gatekeepers. I said, gatekeepers? He said, yeah, your role in the village is to maintain balance and harmony between the village and the invisible world, the world of the ancestors and the spirits. And your role is to keep balance and harmony between people in the village. And your role is to keep balance and harmony between us as humans and nature. So there we would be defined as gatekeepers. You get it? And so there was that role, and gay people are still fulfilling those roles in traditional villages in West Africa.
That's similar to my understanding of the Bear Dasha with Native Americans, too, isn't it?
Right. What today Native Americans would prefer to be called two-spirited.
Right.
Where there were certain kinds of roles that people had to play, and were playing that, and those were honored and respected. And this is true for indigenous people throughout the world, no matter where our ancestors came from.
Mm-hmm.
For example, among the Navajo, there's a very famous saying, that when there is no longer a Nodwe, there will no longer be a Navajo people, a Navajo nation. And the Nodwe would be people like that we today would call gay and lesbian. When there's no longer a Nodwe, there will no longer be a Navajo nation. So you get the sense of the role that gay and lesbian people have played traditionally in cultures. We continue to play those roles today as psychotherapists, as healers, as teachers, as artisans and artists, as creative people, as people out there at the edge of the village that are helping evolution to move forward. Some people call us consciousness scouts. But however you want to say it, there is a specific role that we as gay people are playing. And I think one of Harry Hayes' requests of us as gay people is that we become conscious of those roles. We are able to articulate those roles, and we articulate them to our heterosexual brothers and sisters, because that is, we are both part of a whole, and we are needed as much as they are needed. That we're not naturally in opposition with each other, but we're really part of a whole, and we have a role to play.
How do you see us? I know that you just said, as therapists, as teachers, as healers and artists and things like that, what is your thoughts, and what are you doing in terms of helping get that across, not just to people in the GLBT community, but to cross the bridge?
Part of it is doing a lot of teaching and workshops and talking, such as this radio show, and trying to get out a different kind of awareness or consciousness about what it means to be gay. We have been told that it means to be gay is that it's a sex act. Basically, that one is a homosexual. And that was a definition that was laid on us by non-gay people. And what we need to do is come to a definition of ourselves that comes out of our own lives, our own experience, our own awareness of what it is that we're doing in the world. That's why when Maladome Somme in West Africa talks about gatekeepers, it makes more sense to me, his definition of gay people, because it's what I see gay people doing in this country, mm-hmm. than homosexual does. What we've done by allowing ourselves to be defined as a sex act, what we've done is allowed the tail to wag the dog. And it's about time that we as gay and lesbian people begin to examine not the tail, but the dog, and find out what this is all about. Heterosexuals should not and will not do it for us. We have to do it ourselves.
I'm in total agreement with you, and I've been saying very many of the same things for a long time. And my observation has been that the AIDS epidemic has been a big part of what's woken a lot of people up who are gay or lesbian to this role as healers, as caregivers, as not being able to just sit back and not take action. It's like all of a sudden life and death was pushed in our face, whether we wanted it or not, and what are we doing to make the most of every moment type of attitude started to really emerge, and that sense of community and that sense of something that was binding us together that was greater than each individual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was possible with the AIDS epidemic that happened in the 80s because of the gay liberation movement in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Because the gay liberation movement created community, created the sense of that we're responsible for each other, created the fact that if we're going to get anything, we have to make some noise. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. Mm-hmm. And so we had to speak up. So when the AIDS crisis hit us, we already had the infrastructure in place to fight back, to take care of each other, to be as conscious as we could. And the one flows out of the other in many ways.
I think also that one of the things that was positive about the AIDS epidemic is it also bridged a lot of gay and lesbians with the heterosexual siblings and parents and coworkers and community members.
Absolutely.
And stuff, because others also saw the horror in what was going
Absolutely.
On and
no,
saw
I
the
think...
humanity in it. And I think it was one of those major gifts that came out of such a horror.
Mm-hmm.
So that gatekeeper thing started showing itself and people started opening themselves up to one another.
I think you're absolutely correct. And it had an influence not on gay and lesbian people, but it had an influence on heterosexuals as well. Our non-gay allies came up to the plate and they did what they needed to do. I bow deeply to heterosexuals who rose to the occasion during the 80s and 90s in helping us fight this battle. Mm-hmm. We didn't do it ourselves. We did it with a lot of non-gay support and encouragement.
And that includes even, you know, I mean, in some cases it's a very dirty word, politicians. That includes politicians who are heterosexual that stepped to the plate and put the votes where they needed to be and made the speeches that they needed
including
to be.
Including Barry Goldwater of Phoenix, Arizona.
Uh-huh. So we're going to take another short break here, and we're going to continue our conversation with Don Kilhefner, and this is Stuart Altschuler and Tell the Truth Faster, so stay tuned. Welcome back to our final segment tonight of Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altschuler, and my guest tonight has been Don Kilhefner, a clinical psychologist in private practice in Los Angeles and one of the elders and forefathers of the GLBT community, and so much of what's happened has been, he's been part of this team of catalysts that started 30-some-odd years ago. Don, we've been talking a lot about this sense of community, this sense of, you know, as the Native Americans call it, two-spirit or gatekeeper energy. And I know that, like all of us, your life and your focus of how you're out there teaching has gone through many transformations also and has gotten even more so into a spiritual focus with the Gay Men's Medicine Circle. I keep wanting to say medical. The Gay Men's Medicine Circle. Do you want to talk a few minutes about what this group does? And
yeah, you know, it really, Harry Hay and I knew each other through the 70s, and in the late 70s, Harry and I got together and talked about what was happening with the gay liberation movement. And we thought one of the places where it was drifting away was because there wasn't enough exploration of who we are. Where do we come from? Why are we here? Those questions. And out of that discussion came the Radical Fairy Movement, which now exists throughout the world. An attempt by gay men to explore in a deeper way our history, our roots, and how we live our lives in the world today. And continuing that work here in Los Angeles, we have something called the Gay Men's Medicine Circle. And basically, our purpose is to be of service to the well-being of gay men in our community and are concerned about the welfare of the gay community. And we focus it in that direction, believing that community is essential for our evolution as a people. And our little logo is building a physically healthy, politically aware, creatively alive, and spiritually awake community. So much of my work goes into that. For example, Stuart, you attended recently a major conference that we had here in Los Angeles, sponsored by the Gay and Lesbian Center and the Gay Men's Medicine Circle.
It was great.
A day of intergenerational dialogue, where titled Standing on the Bones of Our Ancestors, where we had a whole day of gay men and lesbians of all ages talking to each other about what the issues are that we have with each other, listening to each other. And what came out of that conference for me was a really deep longing to continue creating community among our people. So I continue to work on that. I'm also finishing up a history of the gay and lesbian community here in Los Angeles. And so I've been doing a lot of writing and will be starting on several other books that largely deal with my own experience, my own growth in consciousness as a gay man over the last 40 years here in Los Angeles.
When's that history coming out?
You know how publishing goes, but sometime in the next year or two or soon.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important because even what your workshop did, Standing on the Bones of Our Ancestors, And a lot of what was said during that day, the importance of people coming up and coming out today, that sense of continuity and that sense of awareness of how they got to be able to do and be who they are today, how these 16 and, like last week's show, talked about a 13-year-old coming out in middle school, how the history helped make today possible is so important.
Right. And any people has to be connected to the roots.
Mm-hmm.
Any people who that's disconnected from the roots will perish.
Right.
It's
and
just that
and
simple.
gay men and lesbians in particular are, in a sense, for a long time, once they come out, very often have been ripped away from their roots, meaning families who've rejected them or abandoned them, or the abuse that you know they've run away because of the abuse that they've had to deal with. So that sense of roots has always been difficult to maintain, because there's always been that lack of honesty and that sense of hiding and the sense of shame that I started talking about at the very beginning of the show.
Well, we saw that very, very dramatically in the African-American community when Alex Haley wrote his book, Roots,
mm-hmm.
and it became a television series, that African-Americans identified with that. They saw that there was a history, there was a lineage, there was something going on there. And I think the same with gay and lesbian people, that those roots are very, very important. And they go back to the beginning of history. For example, in Western culture, the very first epic we've ever seen written is the Epic of Gilgamesh. And to a large extent, that epic talks about King Gilgamesh and his lover, male lover, Enkidu, and their travels and travails. So that we've been a part of history, and we need to know that. Particularly younger people need to know that. That we as older gay men and lesbians have a really important responsibility to younger people, to be available for them, to listen to them, to support them, to encourage them in terms of growing and becoming that next generation of leaders.
I agree with you totally. In fact, I've been on our mutual friend Laleen, I've been on her back for a year now to start writing her memoirs from her perspective too. Don, I really, before I leave the show with my final thoughts, I really want to thank you for taking the time to share with us everything you've shared with us and taken so much of your life and done with it what you've done for the sake of not just GLBT people but for society in general. I want to thank you for being on the show tonight.
Well, I want to echo that with you as well, that you're stepping up to the plate the way you have done here in Los Angeles and elsewhere and assuming your responsibility for our people. It's a delight, and I likewise bow in your direction.
Well, I appreciate that, especially coming from you. Thank you so much. I want to thank everybody who's been listening, and I know even though I haven't been getting callers, I do get emails, and I do run into people through the week that say I listen to the show. Someday some of you will have the courage to pick up the phone and call in and participate in what we're talking about, argue with me or support it. Either way, it doesn't matter. But this is about telling the truth. Earlier, Don and I were talking about a writer named Edward Carpenter, and I spend a lot of time in antique stores and sometimes find myself looking through old books. And about 2 years ago, this book fell off the shelf called The Intermediate Sex by Edward Carpenter, and it was first published as a series of essays about a study of some transitional types of men and women, is what he called the intermediate sex. And it's a book about essays he wrote about homosexuality back in the late 1800s, and it was first published in 1908. The edition that I got is the 1930 printing. And on the very front page is an inscription that is handwriting from the 30s, because it looks like my grandmother's handwriting, to be honest with you. And it's inscribed with this quote, and I don't know whether it comes from someone else or whoever it was that owned this book wrote it, but I'm going to close tonight with this quote that's in the front of this book called The Intermediate Sex by Edward Carpenter. Quote, "The teachings of philosophy and the deductions of biology should find more practical application in the daily reasoning of man. No process is vile. No condition is unnatural. The accidental variation from a given social practice does not necessarily entail sin." Now remember, that was written back in the 30s. And I really want to thank all of you for listening. Remind you to listen again. Tell your friends about the show. And again, thank you, Don, for being my guest tonight. And this is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster, saying good night and hoping all of you find your truth.
The rainbow up high in the land that I heard of once.